Welcome to Frenzy on the Podcast, right here on Movie City News. I'm Noah Forrest, and I will be your chef on this culinary expedition. Today, we've got Stu Van Aersdale. You might remember him from Movie City News, The Reeler, and now he's a senior editor at Defamer. He's coming in to talk to us about, well, summer movies. I know, it's the fall. We're all supposed to be looking forward to what's coming out, awards movies. Well, you can read all about that in my fall preview. But today we're going to take a look back on what we experienced this summer. So without further ado, let's talk to Stu. That rhymed. Hi, Stu.
Hello, Noah. How are you?
I'm good. So I was hoping we could talk about, you know, some movies and talk about the summer. And I wanted to start off by asking you, of all the summer movies that came out this past summer, which one do you think was the best?
Oh, man, tough question on the spot. You know, I think pound for pound, I don't know if I saw a more enjoyable, entertaining, and well-made film than Iron Man. I really just loved it. And just thought from top to bottom, it was just a really well-put-together film. And, you know, just I had a grin on my face for most of it and was really just in awe that something like that can still come from a studio in the summer.
Sure.
And be, you know, successful critically, be successful commercially, and have that kind of momentum going into the next film. I just was really encouraged to see that happen.
Yeah, I think after the Dark Knight tidal wave, I think a lot of people really kind of forget what a huge deal it was when Iron Man came out, even though it was only 3 months ago. And I liked it too. You know, I wasn't as wild about it as you. I think that Robert Downey Jr. is just so much better than the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's not a perfect film by any means. It just
right.
It really. I mean, the you know, Gwyneth Paltrow's character Pepper Potts is still a bit of a I guess question mark in there. But
mm-hmm.
I hope, you know, when she is revived for the second film in a couple of years, that, you know, Pepper Potts is a little more dimensionalized, because I think it was underdone here. But, you know, again, it wasn't perfect, but, you know, it was, you know, better than Indiana Jones 4 or whatever. I mean, it was just...
Indiana Jones 4, did that happen? No, that never happened. There was no...
You know, we can just skip that. We can talk about only good things if you want. I mean, Indiana Jones 4 was, that's the kind of thing I also can't believe that a studio can put out in the summer.
Yeah.
And to get away with it, it was just, you know, a complete nightmare, and I feel kind of embarrassed for everyone involved.
Well, it wasn't just, you know, the studio got away with it. I mean, it was that the fans gave it such a pass, it seems. You know, it's like this...
Everyone did. In fact, it's funny you say that, because, I mean, since you say that, it is kind of a phenomenon that's almost, it parallels Iron Man in a strange way, because it was also critically acclaimed, you know, relatively speaking. You know, I still think, if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, it's pretty good. And it also, obviously, you know, made a crap load of money internationally.
Yep.
And so it was another one of those films where it managed to kind of pull one over on everybody. But it was a totally different phenomenon than Iron Man, in the sense that it was, you know, just a franchise riding on, you know, the previous film's coattails and its reputation, which I guess it's their entitled to. And so, you know, hats off to them. It's just such a cynical exercise. I would hope for a little more, you know, creative, I guess, just, you know, more of a creative success.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Well, I think, you know, with Iron Man, at least they were creating kind of this world from the ground up, and to have Robert Downey Jr. in it, you know, kind of wisecracking, and he's just so charismatic. I think that you're able to forgive a lot of the over-the-top things, you know, like the duel at the end with Jeff Bridges, I think was a little, you know, it was a little but it wasn't, but it was nothing compared to, you know, Shia LaBeouf swinging on vines, or, you know, having a sword fight, you know, between moving cars, and, you know...
Right.
Because we've seen three movies with Indiana Jones, and we know this world already, and they completely just didn't stick to the rules that they had laid down in three previous movies. So
yeah, well, just visually, I mean, you know, the cinematography, I mean, Janusz Kaminski is not Douglas Accombe. I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
And I mean, that's obvious, but the visual counterpoint was so striking that it threw me off. And so that, from the start, was enough to kind of, I guess, throw me for a loop. And then I never really caught up. And then, of course, there's everything else, the script itself, that the performance is just, again, the gross cynical exercise. But, you know, that was the minority, I think. You know, this was a summer where I've told a lot of people that, you know, everything that came out this summer the majority of stuff, I thought, lived up to the hype, you know, for the most part. Dark Knight was really excellent. I didn't, you know, I don't swear by it. I don't think it was, but it is a phenomenon. I don't think anyone can argue with that. I really liked Iron Man. I thought Dark Knight was great. I thought, you know, even stuff like Man on Wire, which people were, you know, swearing by at Sundance, which won an award there, in fact, and which, you know, kind of built up to its release this summer. I think that was a fantastic film. I mean, I loved Man on Wire. And mm-hmm. This is a summer where I think everything that was kind of, you know, propped up to be, you know, excellent and noteworthy was actually excellent and noteworthy. And I wasn't really disappointed by that much. I thought Tropic Thunder was really great. I thought Pineapple Express was really great. I even liked The House Bunny. I guess I'm in the minority of people there. I thought The House Bunny was really funny. And I like Anna Faris.
Anna Faris is just a very charismatic woman. You know, I think she can carry a movie like that. She pulls it off, I think.
Right.
But and the new Woody Allen movie, I mean, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, I think is just as good as everyone said it was. And, you know, that's kind of surprising for me because, you know, a lot of people really loved Match Point and, you know, I liked it, but I thought it was kind of derivative of Crimes and Misdemeanors. And,
sure.
And with Vicky Cristina Barcelona, I thought he really crafted something new, for him at least. And I thought that was one of my
I disagree with you. I think, you know, it's like, speaking of cynical exercises, you know, it was a very nice looking film, and you know, it has a beautiful cast, but it is basically a commercial for, you know, Visit Spain, tourism for the country that paid for it, and I thought of it as no more than just kind of a product placement trifle for its host nation. And I think what he does to people like Patricia Clarkson in that film, who's such an individual and just such an incredibly strong and powerful actress, so sexy and so so just, again, she owns, like, if you saw Elegy, for example, she owns those scenes with Ben Kingsley, and you can actually feel that, you know, she is a force in his life, as opposed to this kind of wimpy, whiny, middle-aged housefrau who can't really, you know, offer anyone anything in Woody Allen's film except admonition not to make the mistakes she made, when I don't buy her making those kinds of mistakes. I just feel like it's kind of another one of those Woody Allen caricature conceits that, you know, we fall for every time. I think that movie was kind of, it was, you know, it was a bad movie, first of all, and it's also very frustrating.
Ouch. Well,
yeah.
Well, I obviously disagree with you. I mean, I think Patricia Clarkson, obviously she's used as a device in the Vicky Cristina Barcelona, but I mean, she's a parallel to the Rebecca Hall character, you know, where if she keeps going down this road, she could potentially wind up like Patricia Clarkson's character, who's in an unhappy marriage. And mm-hmm. Rebecca Hall decides to, you know, follow her dreams a little bit, and she winds up getting shot in the hand, and it's kind of like, well, either way, I mean, that's where it's kind of like the classic Woody comes out, because it's kind of like, either way, you're screwed. You know,
right.
you follow your dream. You know, it's a very hopeful movie, and I agree with you. I mean, it is kind of like a tourism, a pro-Barcelona tourism kind of movie, but I bought it, and... I don't know. I guess I'm a sucker for third-person narrators, also. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that drove me nuts. I mean, I don't think it would have bothered me so much if you know, Allen himself had done the narrating.
Right.
You know, I felt like it was obviously something that was supposed to mimic his style and his patois and his cadence, mm-hmm. but it, for whatever reason, trivialized his tradition of third person narration that he's managed to uphold so well over the years. So that was a little disappointing, but I mean that was the least of my problems really. I just from top to the bottom it just frustrated me.
All right. Well, you brought up Patricia Clarkson, and I think it's really, and Ben Kingsley, actually. You know, the thing about them is that they've been in, I think, like, every movie this summer, it seems, or this year. You know, Patricia Clarkson was in Married Life, Elegy,
right.
Vicky Cristina Barcelona, and you got Kingsley in The Wackness, and War Incorporated, and...
Transparian.
Yeah. So, I think that's kind of interesting. But what was it? I was going to say, did you like The Wackness, since I brought that up?
I'll be honest with you. I did not see The Wackness.
Okay. Well,
that is one I will have to take a pass on. But I've heard good things. I actually talked with Jonathan Levine before Sundance about that film. And I know we covered it last year when it was in production on The Reeler. And the general vibe around it leading up to the festival was very positive. And I anticipated that it would probably, make an impact. I think Levine's a guy who's going to be around for a while, beyond that, I should say that I don't really know if I could make any decent comments. Sorry.
Well, I'd be very interested for you to see it and talk about it with you, because as a fellow New Yorker, it is I think one of the worst movies ever made about New York. all right, but let's move on, I guess. So what was the biggest disappointment for you this summer, do you think? Was it Indiana Jones? Or was it something else?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if Indiana Jones qualifies as a disappointment, because I didn't expect much to begin with. I had a feeling that a lot of the early accolades coming out of Cannes were probably inflated. So when it came time to see it for myself, I wasn't buying the hype, and so by the same token, I wasn't going in expecting to hate it either. I just wanted to, maybe allow for either, and I had kept an open mind, and I loved the introduction. I thought the opening sequence, the little chase sequence of the desert, was really terrific, and I thought, oh my God, this is great. I hope I'm wrong about any apprehensions, but alas, I wasn't, and so, there's that. We already discussed Vicky Cristina Barcelona, which I was very much looking forward to and which very much let me down. And I really don't know if there are many beyond that. I think, again, it was a pretty, pretty good summer overall. And I would recommend, a lot of the things I saw.
Did you see The Happening?
I did see The Happening. I would not necessarily recommend The Happening, but it's an interesting film because a lot of people are talking about what a nightmare, it was for Fox and M. Night Shyamalan, but really that movie, it made money. It's going to continue to make money. And I think the guy is kind of bulletproof, he's kind of a running joke, and we are not really, helping that at all on Defamer, but by the same token, we give him credit where credit is due. And the bottom line is that movie made money and he made a fortune off that. So I think as long as, we look at it for what it was, which was kind of just a genre exercise, B-movie, then it was a success, I think. So.
Well, I think it's also by far the funniest movie I've seen this year. I mean, it's just flat out hilarious. And so I think it is successful on that level. But I don't know if that was his intention.
It probably wasn't his intention, you're right. But by the same token, I think, to write it off as a failure right off the bat was maybe a little short-sighted on a lot of people's accounts. I think that film actually will do just fine.
Well, I think people just wanted to see him fail because of his hubris,
He's not made that many friends, don't get me wrong. And,
mm-hmm.
But, we kind of, while on one hand we do have kind of the running Manoj joke, not to make fun of his name, that is his name, but he made up the night part, and so we just refer to him as Manoj, and we did a birthday card for him this month, and we do kind of like to kind of if he wants hubris, we'll give him hubris,
exactly.
And that's a guy who we've had a lot of fun with, but again, we're fair, and I think he's a major story this summer. He really is, because especially after the DreamWorks deal with Reliance Big Entertainment, you know, he had another co-financing deal with an Indian conglomerate, UTV, that was very lucrative for him. And so that may be kind of, I wouldn't call it pioneering, but it definitely, he's part of that movement of money coming out of there. And I think, you know, if nothing else, you have to give him credit for having the foresight to latch on and cash in.
Well, he's definitely a smart guy, you know. You got to give him credit for that. He knows how to play his cards right. But
Yeah, I mean, he's cornered the market on what he does, and for better or worse.
Yeah. Well, I wish the twist at the end of The Happening was a little better. Like, maybe it turns out that Mark Wahlberg is really Larry the Cable Guy or something.
No, that would have been awesome.
Yeah. He should have really
that would have been great. Or it was like a movie inside a movie or something like that. And, you know, like all the really clumsy line readings were just, you know, kind of part of a horror film gone wrong or something. It could have been anything, but yeah, I agree. It was beyond contract.
It could have all been a dream, and then you wake up and you see Alan Thicke in the shower or something like that. But
sure. that would have been infinitely better, wouldn't it have?
I think so. But anyway, so I want to go back a little bit, and because it was such a monster success, we have to spend a little bit of time talking about The Dark Knight. Which, you know, you said it lived up to the hype, you know, for you. And for me, you know, I don't think anything could possibly live up to that hype. And
I guess to be clear, I would say that, you know, it lived up to, I guess, a certain degree of the hype. It lived up to most of the hype. But it being, like, you know, this IMDb fan movement to make it the greatest film ever made, I mean, that is, needs to be taken in context and, you know, needs to be kind of dealt with on its own. You know, Dark Knight is not the greatest movie ever made. It is not the greatest film of, you know, the last 10 years. It's not the greatest, and I don't know if it's a superhero film ever made, but really that's not for you or I to decide,
right.
And it'll be discussed forever. I guess I'm just glad that, you know, a film like that does exist, that a film like that can, again, a studio can release a film that, however pretentious and kind of overbearingly moralizing it is, that, you know, a film like that can still be released in 2008 and succeed and do really, really well. Of course, it's a Batman film, yeah. And, of course, it's, you know, been marketed within an inch of its life. And it had Heath Ledger, you know, in the cast. And so you've got all these different, you know, plot lines. But, again, it was a good film. And so I really don't have any problem with it, you know, with its
Of
with
course,
success.
Yeah. I mean, I'm rooting for it to do well because I think...
Yeah.
Although I'm kind of worried about the precedent that that might set for other directors, you know, because Christopher Nolan, he's actually a talent. And the fact that this movie's going to be the second highest grossing movie of all time, you know, it's going to lock him into at least another Batman movie. And that's a movie that's time that he could be spending working on something that's a little bit more original. Not to say that The Dark Knight wasn't original, for what it was, but it's still within the confines of a superhero film.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, he's a guy who you can look at the career path of a guy like Sam Raimi, who, you know, he's got three Superman films Spider-Man films under his belt, and he wants to do something else. He's going to go do Jack Ryan or something like that. He's going to pick up another franchise, and so, you know, I think, you know, Nolan does have another Batman film that he's going to do, and not just because he owes it to anyone or because he is required to, but I think he really wants to. I think he wants to finish it out. He wants to get a third one done. I don't think anyone's holding a gun to his head, even himself, to get this movie made. But I agree. I'm really interested in seeing what he does next that's not a Batman film. And I just also hope that, you know, because, I mean, he just keeps doing these very foreboding. I mean, I'd love to see him do a comedy or something like that, like a romantic comedy, because he's got this incredible eye and sense of mood. And I would love to just see him, you know, just take, you know, a couple A-list actors and do a really smart, short, and just fearless romantic comedy and just throw it out there and see what happens. And if he falls on his face, you know, it won't be because he didn't try. That's what I'm worried about, is that, you know, he doesn't necessarily, you know, allow himself the opportunity to take chances. But, you know, he's given me an indication that he's conservative. So I hope for the best.
Well, I agree with you, and I hope that he would go and make that romantic comedy, and then if he falls on his face, he could always make another Batman movie, because...
Okay, yeah, sure.
You know,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
Instead of making the Batman movie next, which is probably what's going to happen. But,
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he just wants to get out of the way. Who knows? But he'll be fine. He'll be fine. I'm not worried about Chris Nolan.
All right. Well, I am a little bit. But
okay.
Anyway, well, thanks for talking, and hopefully we could do this again sometime. It was fun.
Yeah, I'd love that, Noah. Thanks.
All right. Thanks again. Well, that wraps up the Frenzy on the Podcast for this week. Special thanks to Stu Van Aersdale for coming through. You can find his work at defamer.com. You can find my work at moviecitynews.com. Take care.